Okay, welcome from Northern California. If some of you don't know where Humboldt State is, it's on the Northern California coast, about 2 hours south of the Oregon border, and that's where the redwoods grow. So we're behind the redwood curtain. I'm going to talk about what is a concept test. I'm going to try to hurry through because I know we're running a little bit behind on the schedule, too. We'll talk about integration and examples of how this is used. And these, you can pass these around just so you can see what real concept tests look like with my students from a pedology class, but I need them back, so please don't walk away with them. We'll talk about concept test effectiveness and then also other benefits. So a concept test was created largely by Eric Mazur. He teaches physics at Harvard University. And we had Eric Mazur come for our Institute for Student Success last fall, and I had been using these concept tests before, but he really was a very inspiring speaker. Students are given a question, and you can see on these real concept tests, I think they're from Soil 360, which is pedology, they're given 1 or 2 minutes to write down their answers individually, and then what they do is they turn to somebody near them in the classroom, and they consult with their peers, and they try to get a consensus on the correct answer. And then the concept test, the instructor asks for a show of hands or some other means to see whether the students are getting the answers correctly or not. What a good concept test does is it probes comprehension, not merely rote memorization. You want people to process the information and predict outcomes of an event or apply rules or principles to new situations or select a procedure to complete a new task. Those are the kinds of things you're trying to get people to think about, higher level thinking. So I've used this in upper division soils courses since 2013, we're in a different millennium now, for these classes in particular, origin and classification of soils, forest and range soils management, and also in soil physics. These are forest and range students here. This is an example, and it's difficult to read, so I'll read part of it for you. It says, it sets up the scenario. Is this the same one that you have? I think it is. So it sets up the scenario where students are asked to try to review some of their Soil 360 concepts. What's a control section? Where is it for temperature regime? What is the soil temperature regime? And what's tricky about this one? Anybody know right offhand? You Davis students? This is probing the difference between cryic and frigid, is what it's doing. And that's a tricky one because the mean average soil temperature is between 0 and 8 for both of those categories of soil temperature regimes, but it depends on whether there's an O horizon or, and whether it's saturated or not. So we go through this and see if they can remember what they were supposed to learn out of Keys to Soil Taxonomy and determine whether it's cryic or frigid. On the left-hand side of the paper here that you're looking at, this is where they answer it on their own. Over here, they're supposed to answer it after consultation with a classmate. And then I started putting a space down at the bottom of the page, which is what do we learn as a discussion as a whole class? Because sometimes just turning to talk to your peers doesn't do the whole thing. This is another one up on the screen. This is a classic block diagram puzzle that I give them where they match up series names on the block diagram to family taxa. So they have to think about landscape position and so forth. Sometimes I give them hints over on the right-hand side. This is one from Forest and Soils Management where I'm asking them what besides fire can cause water repellency? What's the most important soil physical characteristic affected by fire and so forth? Some of these are a little bit rote memorization, but others are trying to get them to process information. This one's from soil physics. What's the form and name of the conductivity equation used to describe heat flow in soils? And that one's valuable because they're going to be using the same form with some kind of conductivity term, some kind of gradient, and some kind of flux. They're going to be using that for a bunch of different applications. So if they can kind of piece it out here, that'll be good for the whole class. Why is prediction of heat transfer based on soil color a complex question? Is it wet? You know, there's a lot of good stuff in there. And this is another one for soil physics where we're working with soil strength, and I want them to tell me about what a Morse circles diagram tells them about shear stress and cohesion and whatnot. So oftentimes I think we flash a cartoon or a graph at a student but we don't really ask them whether they understand what's on what axis and what does it all mean and how is that information derived. You know, which one is makes the first point on the Mohr circle and the second point on the hemisphere of a Mohr circle. So this is directly testing them, but it's low stakes. It's no stakes. I usually count about 9 to 12% of the course grade on these concept tests, and mainly it's attendance. If they come there and they put their name on the concept test and a few comments, they'll get credit for it. But it's low stakes, as it shows down below. Probably do this about once a week. I use papers. They take a few minutes as an individual and then consult their neighbors. And I can do a quick show of hands to see whether this is something that we have to spend more time on or they've all got it and I need to move on. The papers are turned in so I can make copies of it for meetings like this to give presentations. And then I hand back their papers, and those end up being pretty good review questions for quizzes and so forth. And then for those students who are sleeping in late on Tuesday morning, I put the concept test up on our learning management system, but they don't get credit unless they show up for class. Generally, in the literature, they say aim for 35 to 70% correct responses. If it's more than 70%, you shouldn't be spending much time on it. They've already pretty much got the concept. If it's less than 35%, you may need to discuss it further. There's seven principles as outlined by McConnell et al. In Journal of Geological Education. It encourages student-faculty contact, peer instruction, active learning. It gives them prompt feedback on whether they know the subject or not. It emphasizes conceptual understanding over facts. We communicate high expectations, like this is what you need to know, folks. If you're not getting this, you better get on the stick with your Mohr circles. And it also respects diverse talents and ways of learning. Some of the students that won't talk in class will do very well on these concept tests, and then they gain the respect of their fellow students in class. There's a lot of ways to do this. I've never done clickers. I don't think I will. I have done raising hands and raising lettered or colored cards, but that's kind of awkward and hard to manage, so I just pass out the sheets. And question banks have been developed for geoscience, physics, and biology. If there's one out there for soils, I don't know about it. Tell me about it. But I do them for my own classes right now. I'm going to give you a couple of graphs that show the effectiveness of the concept tests, and I'm just going to jump into them right here. So this is a first cut on it. The turquoise blue, along the x-axis are individual concept tests. This is 35, 36 people responding, and this is the percent of correct answers. Now, in this graph, the turquoise blue is those people, like about 15% on this, got the answer completely right on the concept test when they first answered it. This, the red bar, which I'm not sure if I should use, says they put something down, but it wasn't the complete answer. The orange bar is the additional score when they've talked to their friends. And then the darker blue is what they get, what they write out in the notes for the whole class consultation. If we kind of start, take away the partial answers, you can see that they're gaining a lot when you compare the turquoise blue to the orange and the darker blue. So they're getting something out of it by writing it down. This is forest and range soils, and this is the one without the partial answers. Very few people were getting the complete answers, as indicated by the turquoise blue, and so I'm not sure if they just weren't awake until they turned and talked to their neighbor or what, or they hadn't studied their material. But afterwards, they've written something that convinces me that more than 70% on a lot of these, they're stating something intelligent about the question and the answer. The big benefits for me have been not so much in assessing student learning, but the real benefit for me that I didn't anticipate is that they get to know each other, and so when we go out and work in the field, they have already broken the ice, and they'll jump into a pit, they'll dig their hole, they'll describe the pet on much more rapidly, and they'll talk to each other a lot more after having done these concept tests. They're into it already. It encourages discourse in the class and peer pressure to keep up with content, maybe. The concept test that I do, if I need an inspiration for what to ask on that particular day, I look for my learning outcomes in the syllabus, which are very detailed for every lecture. And I can really pinpoint one of those and give them a concept test on it. I did a survey of one of my classes to say how much, you know, what they were getting out of it. About half of them said they study more because they know they're going to happen. They'll prepare more. None of them thought that it would influence their attendance. They either were going to show up or not, you know. So that didn't do a whole lot. Half a point each wasn't hurting them too bad. These are some of the direct comments I got back from the students. Teaching back to others is a way of making sure you understand. Even if I know the answer at first, I felt good that I would not be penalized for making a guess. It's definitely helpful to revisit topics recently discussed. It sticks in your mind better. Plus, it's one thing to be lectured to, but it's another to have to explain it to yourself. That's exactly what we're trying to do, is that self-actuation and learning of these concepts. McConnell's research, I just cited this one paper, and this was geoscience, and they had a bunch of different institutions, 25 institutions, work with and without concept tests. And they had three or four of classes that did concept tests and the rest didn't. And they administered a geosciences concept inventory to all the students in those classes. And they did find that the, it's not causation, but they did find that the concept test groups were in the top third scoring people of that geosciences concept inventory. It could also be that the professors were just more interested in doing something different and were enthusiastic in the first place, but that's the data they came up with. What could soil scientists do? I want to leave you with some things to think about. You could try using these concept tests. They're kind of fun. We could share concept test questions in some kind of a bank that we thought was a consistent sort of set of things students should know. I tend to specialize in my questions based on what we're doing in the class, so I don't know if I'd be inspired by a bank, but I think I do what I need to do for that particular group of people anyway. The other thing, too, is that if we develop some kind of soil science concept inventory, not nearly as extensive as, say, the fundamentals exam, but some smaller subset of standard questions, we could use that as a tool, an instrument, to see what our teaching is doing. So that's the way other folks have done it, and we might want to consider something like that, too. And with that, hopefully I did it in a meaningful time period, and I would love to hear questions. Yes?
Can you go back to the graph that you were showing, the responses before and after? Yeah, that one more. Or the next one.
Yeah. This is just...
A small percentage of the students actually got the questions right on their own. Who's giving all this great information?
Yeah.
That
yeah, that's what I said, is I think that when they first come in, maybe they're not awake. But when they start talking to each other, they're more on task. It's starting to shake out of the coffee.
So there's some knowledge that didn't come out when they were answering the question.
Yeah.
But then when they had to sit down and talk about it, some new piece of knowledge kind of broke loose from their brain and then
yeah.
came out of them.
Or maybe the dynamic of having to talk back and forth. Well, do you mean this? No, I think what she's talking about is this. Oh, yeah, I think you're right. It's, at minimum two. It depends on the classroom seating arrangement, what you can do. For my 360 class, the pedology class, I made everybody sit in the first front rows of a very large auditorium because I knew I was going to be doing this. And so I would say that it was like two or three. It's not regulated, but that kind of depends on the physical setup of your classroom. But I had to make them move down into the front pews for that one, for that particular room. It depends. If it's just a really kind of easy one that resolves quickly, maybe 5 minutes. But if it's something that we need to talk about that people are like, what are you talking about? It may take 10 or 15 minutes because it's based on the learning outcome. We got to get it. And it takes as long as it does. Yeah?
Sorry,